from the Cyber Hub bunker and studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Top of the morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast, Monday, April 15th, 2024, tax day here in the United States. But what a weekend this has been. I mean, it's really been kind of an emotional roller coaster. There's a lot happening. We're going to be talking about the Iranian attack on Israel on this morning's program, kind of some of the stages that led up to the 300 different types of weapons that were sent to Israel, so some of the cyber action that took place in the days leading up to the attack, and so much more there as well, kind of showing you the full picture. I think the picture that's often missed in these types of conflict, as well as a Palo Alto Zero Day and so much more. So let's get right into this morning's show. Obviously, traveling, not in the studio. My studio is under construction for the next essentially 3 weeks. We won't be back into our new studio until, I believe now, the second week of May. So you'll see me out and about, and I apologize, but that's just the nature of the beast here. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. For whatever you're drinking this morning, whether it be your espresso, your Celsius, your coffee, your tea, coffee cup, cheers. Let's go ahead and get going. We've started with Palo Alto here, by the way, has started releasing hot fixes for a recently disclosed zero-day vulnerability that's believed to have been exploited by state-sponsored threat actors, just as the first attributions have been made. This is CVE-2024-3400. It allows a remote unauthenticated attacker to execute arbitrary code with root privileges on the targeted firewalls, appliances with global protect and device telemetry enabled are vulnerable to these types of attack. They initially released mitigation only, but on Sunday, they released hot fixes for impacted PAN-OS versions. These hot fixes were released initially and more expected throughout this week. Shodan and Census search engine show roughly 40,000 potentially impacted or internet-exposed appliances available. Veloxity was the first to spot the exploitation, tracked the threat actor behind the attacks as UTA-0218. In attacks observed since March 26, the attackers leveraged the compromised devices to move into the targeted organization's external network and exfiltrate data. Multiple organizations have been targeted, and in some cases, the attackers attempted to deploy a new Python backdoor named Upstyle. The company said its initial blog post, it's been unable to link the activity to previously known threat actors or operations, but did say that it's highly likely a state-sponsored threat actor. And some have set found links to Lazarus or Beyond Leon out of North Korea. Others have seen stuff pointing to China as well. So you want to get those devices patched up as well. Sisense customers and a lot of people are asking a lot of questions about a recently announced breach by the company. The Sisense CISO issued a statement last week on Wednesday saying the company was aware of information leaked or restricted access server. Customers were advised to rotate credentials used for their Sisense application on Thursday evening. Apparently, there was an update. Customers was reset keys, tokens, and other credentials in their environment used within the Sisense application. That's CISO Sangram Dash saying. The post listed dozens of specific actions customers needed to take, but provided no information on what exactly happened, who was behind the incident, what was stolen, and chances are they may or may not know all that information. That sometimes you can't share that information because of an ongoing law enforcement investigation. It could have national security consequences, and in this case, it sure does. Multiple commentators wanted to know if they were affected and expressed confusion about the notices released by Sisense and CISA on Thursday. The company declined to comment on Thursday, did not respond for requests on Friday, and today, Monday, nothing is new there. Philips Healthcare, Verizon, NASDAQ, and Air Canada use Sisense to gather, analyze, and visualize data from different sources, and that's just a small speck of the customer base that they've got. Cybersecurity journalist Brian Krebs spoke to two sources within Sisense who alleged the incident started with attackers breaching Sisense's GitLab code repository and gaining access to credentials they used to break into the servers where customer data was being held. Chris Hughes, chief security advisor at Indoor Labs, and an innovation fellow at CISA, told Recorded Future that this highlights the interest by malicious actors when it comes to targeting widely used software products. Yeah, I mean that's nothing new there. They're always going after software products. They're going after your GitHub and GitLab instances any chance they get. The Microsoft Russia breach is taking a turn as CISA on Thursday issued an emergency directive mandating that all federal agencies immediately hunt for signs of a known Russian APT that broke into the Microsoft corporate network and pivoted to steal sensitive correspondence from U.S. government agencies. The directive's coming less than 3 months after after Microsoft disclosed the hack and confirming Midnight Blizzard was behind the attack, and they also store source code, which may still be poking around their internal systems. According to the directive by CISA, federal agencies must immediately analyze the content of exfiltrated emails, reset compromised credentials, and take additional steps to ensure authentication tools for privileged Microsoft Azure accounts are secure. Midnight Blizzard's successful compromise of Microsoft's corporate email accounts and exfiltration of correspondence between the agencies and Microsoft presents a grave and unacceptable risk to agencies. But wait a minute. We just had a few weeks ago. Was it last week? Was it last week that the Cyber Review Board said, oh, it's all Microsoft's fault, they're reckless? Or is Microsoft facing a nation state? A nation state that's bound to attack Microsoft because of Microsoft doing business with the government. And maybe if we had a decent shot at foreign policy in this country, because our foreign policy doesn't seem to get any sort of, none of the last seven or eight presidents have had a foreign policy that actually means a speck outside of just catering to some headline or some news story or some interview somewhere. Microsoft here is the victim. And they were victimized because the Russia was targeting the United States government. And had this been the United States government's physical servers on site, on-prem, they didn't use Microsoft, we would consider that an act of war. Just saying, I'm not saying we should go to war with Russia here, so don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but there's something to that. So there's that as well. Roku also over the weekend announced that 576,000 accounts were hacked in a credential stuffing attack after disclosing another incident that compromised 15,000 accounts in early March. The company said attackers used login information stolen from other online platforms to breach many active Roku accounts as possible in a credential stuffing attack. They leveraged automated tools to attempt millions of logins using a list of user password pairs, with this technique being particularly effective against accounts whose owners have reused the same login information across multiple platforms. You could also like actually secure your password policy by having good IAM at Roku. And when you see this types of attempt coming, you would be able to recognize it and put a stop to it. But nonetheless, there's victims there as well. The Federal Trade Commission is sending out $6.3 million in partial refunds to 267 former AT&T wireless customers as part of a data throttling settlement. In 2019, the action follows a 2014 lawsuit by the FTC claiming that AT&T did not fully disclose the terms of its so-called unlimited data plans to customers, specifically the fact that their data speeds would be significantly reduced after they hit a specific threshold. AT&T compensated current consumers with $52 million out of the $60 million settlement through bill credits and refunds. However, former customers have not received any share of the settlement. They do now. This month, MITRE will be adding two sub-techniques to its attack database that have been widely exploited by North Korea. The first, not entirely new, is the manipulation of transparency, consent, and control, a security protocol that regulates application permission on Apple Mac OS. The other is the Phantom DLL hijacking, a lesser-known subset of DLL hijacking, where attackers take advantage of reference but non-existent DLL files in Windows. Those are all joining the MITRE. You want to update your security operations team to that as well. Last week, Cybertech was going on in Israel. Cyber Defense Chief Gabby Portnoy, the leader of the INCD in Israel, the Israel National Cyber Directorate, highlighted at the time the intensity and cyber attacks against Israel has tripled since October 7th. Iran and its proxies, including Hezbollah, are increasingly joining efforts in order to try and penetrate the cybersecurity of Israel. When Hamas's military wing commander Mohammed Def and leader Yahya Sinwar surprised Israel on October 7th, they succeeded in undermining the physical security of the people in Israel. At the same time, on the digital level, by the order of Iran's supreme leader Ali Khamenei, cyber attacks by Iran and Hezbollah in the region and beyond started around the clock against Israel. He said the attack intensity is higher than ever before, with Iranian and Hezbollah groups cooperating to attack Israel in every sector of the land. Portnoy disclosed that Iran's intelligence ministry has civilian proxies conducting cyber attacks against Israeli targets under the guise of a tech company working from an office building in the heart of Tehran. Some of these attacks were stuff that we cover here on the show, like the Ziv Medical Center in the holy city of Safat up north. Obviously, there was more to that, including Gil Shwayd, the longtime cybersecurity and founder and executive of Checkpoint, talking about the number of Iranian and Hezbollah attacks have more than doubled, according to their stuff. So obviously that's taken effect. And that goes into what was going on over the weekend when Iran deployed and sent over 300 different projectiles from suicide drones to ballistic missiles to ground-to-ground missiles towards Israel. A Iranian cyber group named Handalah claims to have breached Israel's radar systems and sent hundreds of thousands of threatening text messages to Israeli citizens. The group alleges that it infiltrated the radar system, dispatched 500,000 text messages. You have only a few hours to fix the system, the message warned. Some of this was shared on Telegram. Some of it is fake. Some of it is just pure propaganda. The Iranians love psychological warfare. This was one of those as well. Prior to Iran's missile attack on Israel, though, the pro-Iranian cyber group Handalah claimed to have breached the radar system. Again, all in all, there were a bunch of inconsistencies with the stuff they posted. And so a lot of this was just ops Israel, kind of, you know, targeting Israel. But none of it really impacted Israel's defense. And obviously, they shot down 99.9% of projectiles. We pray for the health of the young 7-year-old Bedouin Arab Israeli young girl who was injured due to the rocket attack. She's still hospitalized, and we give strength to her family and during these hard times. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back tomorrow with a whole lot more. Until then, have a great rest of your day, and most importantly, y'all, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.